Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host, Madame Perry. Some of you know me as Jennifer Perry, and some of you just know me as the goddess of Corgi Manor. And I love to start every show off with a good dance break. And this one's no exception, and this is also going to be another exciting show. I have my guest, and this is not her first time in Madame Perry Salon, so she's used to the setup in here, the furniture. Somebody said it was like the inside of Jeannie's bottle, and I think she's got her own special cushions in here. Please welcome author Sherry Meeks. Come on in, Sherry.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Madam Perry. And it is like a genie's bottle in here. It's beautiful. I wish everybody could see it.
Thank you. I like the little, some people thought that the beaded curtains were too much. I said, no, it's a good thing.
Never too much.
So I am very excited to have you on here, and there's been a lot of stuff happening, it's starting to happen for you all of a sudden. Things are starting to click. I mean, you've been writing for a long time. You have a master's, an MFA in creative writing. Is that correct? From Southern New Hampshire University?
Southern New Hampshire University, yes. I have a master's in fiction, and that's something that I always wanted to have, but it took a while before I could find a program that would work with my work schedule. But I kept going back to the internet looking, and my sister was helping me as well. And she's been on your show before. Kim Meeks has been on your show. She's a singer. Yes. And so Kim had mentioned that she had seen something online, and that didn't quite work, but then I found something else. So finally, I was able to start my master's program, and I finished that. It's been about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now, actually. So, and that kind of started the ball rolling where I started writing more, and it's just something that I do now, and I really enjoy.
And I'm just one of the many hundreds of thousands of people that are glad you did. Now, you also teach writing, don't you?
I do. I teach creative writing at a local college, and I really enjoy that part of it, to see how students, they're very excited, you know, initially in the class, and you can see how they learn and they try different things, and they get very excited as well. It's a fun class. It's a lot of work, but I think most of the students really enjoy it. And they like the fact that they come up with things that they never thought that they would end up with before they started the class. I don't even really know if they have an idea of what will happen in the class, but it's a really fun class to teach.
It must be very exciting to watch.
It is. It is very exciting to watch, especially students who really dig in and just enjoy the process, and you can see them grow over just a few short weeks. It's amazing how much a person can help their writing skills, can improve their writing skills over really a very short period of time. It is. It's very rewarding, and it's exciting to watch.
So I imagine so with people who think that they can, or people who have this fear that they won't know what to do, they won't be imaginative enough, and then you help them break through their fear, unfold the creativity.
Yes, and I think, Jennifer, that's one of the biggest things that stops a lot of people, not just with writing, but the creative ventures that they want to head out on. A lot of times, that's the biggest thing, is the initial fear that does stop them with, you know, painting or writing or whatever it is they have that really they think might become a passion, is the fear. Initially, but with the students, you're absolutely right. They are afraid initially. they don't want to look foolish. And part of the class is peer review of their work, which is a huge, it's a huge undertaking for not only the students that are the student that's presenting their work or his or her work, but also the students that are critiquing. It's such a personal thing when you write any piece. It doesn't matter how short it is. It's part of who you are when you sit down and take the time and create something. So it's very personal. And one of the things we do in the class is if they are the person that's being critiqued, they can't talk initially. They're in a box. And that's true of many creative writing classes is initially they can't talk. They can respond after a little while to what the students have said. But the main thing is to listen and to try to learn from your peers. And that's true on any level of writing, even best-selling authors and authors that have won major awards. You have to have peers that read your work and give you input and are there trying to help you make your work better. And so I think they come away with that knowing when they finish the class, knowing that your work does need to be critiqued. You don't need to just sit in a corner somewhere and not show your work to anybody. It'll always make it stronger if you have somebody else read it. And it doesn't have to be an instructor. It can be a peer that knows immediately that, oh, this feels a little uncomfortable. This doesn't feel quite right. And then the students learn from that. And I think they eventually enjoy that process as well.
Eventually enjoy it.
Eventually. That's exactly right. Right. Because it is,
I'd imagine
it's
Well, yeah, at first I'm sure it's a little terrifying. I don't have an MFA. I've never been through anything like that, that kind of a peer review. So I can't really, I can't imagine comparing it. Except I did take a course in stand-up comedy once. Taught by Jeff Justice. And yeah, you have to, get up in front of each other in the front of the class and do your material over and over. But it's a very supportive group. We all get up and we clap and we let each other know, things that are working. So it's a good, safe place.
Right. So. But still at the same time, I'm sure that, Jennifer, that is just as terrifying, if not more, because there you are, your entire self. You are the act, you are the presentation. So I can see where that would be very, very, very off-putting.
You can't blame it on anybody else.
No, that's true. But to be in a supportive place, that's very important.
Yeah,
with any creative endeavor, to be supportive of students, absolutely. As an instructor, that's what I have to be. And then the students pick up on that as well. They realize that they have to be supportive of their classmates, and I think most of them do want to be, because they know what it feels like. And I really think that most people in general want you to succeed, just like you're saying, standing in front of a room full of people. They want you to do well.
Yeah,
they
and
really
I do feel, when I see other authors, I know a lot of authors, I read a lot, I interview, I'm an entertainment publicist. Everyone, I mean, there's an overwhelming a show and an actual there's overwhelming support in the writing community for one another, which helps.
Yes, I definitely agree. I was talking to somebody through Facebook. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you dear.
No, I was just going to confirm what you said. I was talking to Sherry Rabinowitz, who has another podcast, chatting with Sherry.
Yes, our buddy Sherry Rabinowitz.
Yes, but we were saying the exact same thing. That definitely there is a lot of support, and we were saying that we were definitely going to support each other. We haven't known each other that long, and we've only known each other through the internet and talking on the phone on her show. But immediately there's this camaraderie and this desire to help the other person, for sure, definitely.
I like that. Well, let's get to the really good stuff. Let's talk about your brand new book. A fresh novel called Finding Tambri. So tell us about, first of all, who is Tambri? And who's trying to find her?
Tambri is a woman who has, initially she has lost her child, her young son, he has died, and she's married to the perfect man, her high school sweetheart, but after that happens, the marriage disintegrates. And this, and that, at that point, that's where the book starts. So Tambri is actually trying to find out who she is. So she's searching for herself, really, after such a tragic event. She's trying to figure out who she is after this tragedy that ultimately would change anybody. And she does so by deciding that she's going to choose one wrong man after another, which she does, and they each have their own particular flaws. And the only prerequisite that she has is that each of these men, that they don't have any children, because she says she just cannot go through that again. So it's definitely her journey, and I'm sure many of us, not that we've lost children, but we've all had tragic things happen to us, and it definitely changes who we are and our perception of the world. And in this story, she's trying to figure out who she is after this tragic event.
So how does Tambri, okay, so she's lost her child, and the child is very young in the book. She's,
right.
He's 4 years old.
Exactly. Yes.
When she loses, and then her marriage falls apart. But so how does she determine or deduce that pairing herself with all these unsuitable men will help her in this journey of finding herself?
I understand what you're asking. I don't think it's not a conscious decision that she actually thinks it will help herself. It's more, initially it's kind of a destructive choice that she makes. Mm-hmm. Her best friend, whose name is Vicky, she feels that it's her job to save Tambri, and she attempts to set Tambri up with a nice guy after these events have happened. And Tambri realizes that, or she thinks or believes that she doesn't deserve a nice guy anymore. So she almost feels that she should be punished. So she doesn't really, she herself doesn't know that this is a journey, but it absolutely is. She just feels that it's a type of punishment that she's going through. She doesn't really deserve a positive life anymore, a good life anymore. So it's really a search for redemption that she's not even aware that she's on this particular type of mission. She's just there to punish herself. Even though the book doesn't say what happened to the child, as the mother, she feels that it's her responsibility to take care of her child, and so it's kind of her mission to punish herself, and so that's what happens.
And so she goes through a series of husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Each one's not exactly the ideal choice. And
right.
But then again, there seems to be definitely a dichotomy personality. She's doing this to herself, but yet by day her job is that she's a phlebotomist.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to take a great pleasure in, or feels like it is definitely her mission to make people feel better. You know, she wants to make everyone else feel better, just not herself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even though she's very sweet to her friend Vicky, she still retains her kindness, and she definitely has her sense of humor about her. But there definitely is that subtle play of the job that she has as a phlebotomist, as helping people. And there's one scene in the book where she's helping a very an older lady, probably in the book. I think it says she's in her 80s, somewhere around there. But she helps her out of the chair. And it's interesting that she's lifting that dead weight, almost helping the lady to move on with her life. But in a certain way, she's kind of stuck in this death that has happened. So there definitely is a definite play between what her job is and what's going on with her life. There's kind of a tug back and forth between the fact that she is such a sharing and giving person, and she doesn't lose that side of herself, which the story could be so incredibly depressing, which, you know, there's a definite sadness to the book. There's a definite, this mood that you can feel throughout the book of her depression. But at the same time, there is some hope, even though she would never say it, not initially. There is hope there because she does stay the kind person that she is. And there's definitely parts of the book that are very funny. And Tambri and Vicky definitely see the funny side of things, even though this horrible thing has happened.
So a bit different because there's a lot of situations like that or stories, which scripts where there are this kind of a conflict, where somebody goes through this kind of a loss and they take it out on the world and everyone around them, whereas Tambri internalizes that. She still gives kindness to the world, but internalizes that toward herself.
That's absolutely right. And that is, go ahead.
No, please. Keep going, girl.
I was just saying that it's interesting that you put it that way, Jennifer, that she doesn't lash out at the world. She definitely puts all that pain inside, and her best friend Vicky sees that. And it's, you know, when you do see somebody in the real world, when you see somebody suffering like that, it almost hurts you more as a friend. And that's another part of the story is you see Tambri tells about half the story, and all the people around her tell the rest of the stories. So you can see how they hurt as well, how they respond to this or how they react. And Vicky, her best friend, definitely suffers alongside Tambri. And I think she probably suffers more because Tambri doesn't lash out at the world. She sees the fact that Tambri keeps this all inside. And as her best friend worries and worries and worries about her and tries everything she can to help her.
So, as I said, the story is told in like a series of standalone short stories from different people's points of view.
That's
right. How did you make the decision? What made you choose to tell the story in this manner?
It was definitely, it started with a creative writing class that I had before my MFA. And one of the stories, I think it's about the fourth story into the book, it's the third or fourth story. That was actually the first story that I wrote in a creative writing class. So definitely anybody who wants to be a writer, take a creative writing class. That will definitely help you head in the right direction. So the first story that I wrote was from one of the husband's perspectives. And from there, I realized that really the main character of this entire thing was Tambri. And so I had begun with a short story. And the novel in stories is a very unusual thing. It has been done. There's one beautiful work, Olive Kittredge. I don't know if you've ever read that, Jennifer. It's a beautiful piece of just a wonderful novel. It's in stories as well, and there's a couple more. But it's just interesting to have those boundaries. And I know I made a conscious decision to put that boundary around it. And I think some people might think, well, that makes it even tougher. But sometimes putting boundaries around your work helps you to see where it's going more easily. Sometimes those boundaries are things that you need. And that's one thing that I do teach my students. One thing is, you know, writers, especially fiction writers, we have all these options and all these different ways we can go. But sometimes the things that help us the most are to start with boundaries. And I think that's one thing that definitely helped me. And within those boundaries, you still have so many different ways to go. And you still have that organic nature of writing that's there. But the fact that you add those boundaries actually, for me, helped me to finish the work and continue with each short story. So that's how it kind of started, and then it just kind of it grew from there.
How did you where did the story come from? Is this based on someone you know or a situation you had read about?
The story itself is fictional, the fact that she has lost a child. And it's interesting. Again, writing is very organic. You don't know where it's going to take you. That first story that I wrote, there was nothing about a child that had been lost in that story. But then you start to write, and then you realize, okay, something just happens with the writing process. And you kind of follow it along, and you work, and you rework. And so then I realized, well, this is what's going on with her, that she's lost a child, and her perfect marriage has fallen apart. And so that's fictional. But there are definitely people in the story that relate to people that I know, family that I know. There's her grandmother in the story who has actually, she's already passed away when the story begins, but she's shown in flashbacks, is definitely based on my grandmother, who used to read cards for fun. We would sit around at her house, and she would just take a deck of playing cards, and, you know, just for fun, I have dark hair, and she'd say I was the queen of clubs or the queen of spades, one of those, depending on the dark hair. And then from there, just, you know, she'd say, this is just for fun, you know, and she'd read the rest of the cards, and she'd say, you're going to travel many roads. And so definitely the grandmother figure is based on my grandmother. And every time I read it, I think of her. And in fact, my uncle read it recently, and he called me first thing he said, that is based on Maybell, which was my grandmother's name. I said, absolutely, that's based on my grandmother. So he loved that fact. And so, and a couple of other things, Jennifer, definitely Tambri's, her kindness and her, even though she doesn't realize it, she's definitely a fighter. And that's based on my mom. I'm sure it is, because my mom has had breast cancer twice.
Oh, my.
And, so it never – and she's survived. She survived that. But even at the toughest times, and there have been tough times, she, you know, always stayed the same. She didn't lash out at the world. And I know that affected Tambri's character. I absolutely know it did. Without really thinking about it at the time, but somebody asked me about that afterwards, and I know that's very true. And then there's one other character, one of the husbands is definitely based on one of my cousins. you know, the way he looks, and the fact that he's a really big guy, and the character in the book, he talks about the fact that, you know, being the biggest guy in the room, that people always, you know, want to start a fight, you know, which is very true a lot of the times, and I know that's true with my cousin. But so you always, you know, I always think you're, as a writer, you're affected by everybody around you, things that happen around you, and they kind of seep into your work, which makes your work, hopefully, even more truthful, more compelling, because you do have the thread of real life in there, and that's what fiction should be, I think, is, you know, it feels of real life. You can... it's very tangible. When you read about Tambri, you can, from my point of view, you can definitely feel her pain. You can feel what she's going through, and part of that is pulling from my life and the people around me and things that have happened.
And just to be sure, and how's your mother doing now?
She's doing great. She's doing good. Really, really well. The last time. She was diagnosed the last time. It's been about 4 years, so everything's really good. Everything's really good. So knock wood. I'm not going
to worry. Good. Glad to hear that.
But she's doing really good. Thank you for asking.
Well, you're welcome. It matters. She's an important lady. And
exactly.
All right. Well, how does your family feel about this book? If they all read it, and especially the ones who... Well, we know what your uncle says, and of course you've got your uncle.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so...
Well, it's funny because my mom was definitely my proofreader. So she's read it about 8 or 9 times. So, but she, I think they're all, you know, it's the same for me too. They knew I was working on it, and it was part of my MFA. It was part of my thesis for my MFA. And the book was mostly finished when I finished my MFA. But I definitely knew that the end wasn't done, and it also needed a lot of tweaking, a lot of reworking. And so everybody knew that I was working on it and working on it and working on it. And then finally it's done. And I think they couldn't believe it in a very good way, and I couldn't believe it either. And I think I've read writers say before, you know, you work and you work and you work, and then all of a sudden it's done. But it's not all of a sudden, because it takes a lot of time to write a book, and it takes a lot of time to go back through and just find the little things that don't quite work. But they're very excited, just as I am. My sister is especially excited. You know, we're very close, and she sings, so I'm excited about her singing, and she's really excited about this. And my parents and relatives and friends, and it's interesting because they get excited. Even some of the people that didn't know I was writing a book, when I tell them that I've written a book, they get very excited, and it makes me, it's a very reciprocal thing. They'll talk to you. I ran into somebody today that I haven't seen in years, and she's like, wow, you know, you wrote a book, and then she's asking questions. It's a very positive thing. It's a very positive thing for me, and then, you know, hopefully everybody that I run into and tell them about it, and the energy kind of flows back and forth. And it's very exciting.
Well, and I'm sure, because for one thing, it's very exciting to think somebody has a novel, or, you know, somebody makes music. It's very interesting, and the whole process is kind of mysterious and exciting to everyone. But also the fact that everybody knows whether they've done it or not. It's not just an easy thing. So I think that they are impressed and have a lot of admiration for someone who does put in the work, put in the effort. You know, you're a very health conscious gal. You've taught jazzercise, and you've led a lot of exercise classes, you know, professionally for years. And
yes.
I know when I was going 6 days a week to CrossFit, and the coach would say, you know, I'd say something about, oh my gosh, look at this. And they go, you put in the work. You put in the work. So don't thank me. You know, you put in the work. And I'm sure, you know, that's how people feel about you. They're going, oh my gosh, Sherry, you put in the work. You did it. You had the idea, the concept. You knew how to do it. You put in the work. You knew what to do. You knew where to get help when you needed it. Like your mother being the, thank goodness you had your mom could proofread for you.
Exactly.
And, exactly. And put together a gorgeous book. I think people are impressed. You know, because it's one thing to talk about it, but then to actually to hunker down and do it, whole different ballgame. And I think
I'm guessing you're right.
I know I'm right. And you know what else?
I know you're right.
I know
it is.
It's true.
I know you're right. What's interesting too is when I do mention to people, a lot of times they'll say, you know, I talked to somebody, it's so funny, you know, you start talking to people about these things and they start telling you about the things they want to do. And that's really a cool thing that's happened with this. But I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and he said, you know, if I went really out of my comfort zone, I would write a book. And I said, well, you should do it. You should do it. And I think a lot of people have this in the back of their mind, you know, they're hanging on to this. But definitely they should start the process. They should start the process and see where it leads them. And when they do complete it, they'll know this wonderful feeling of being able to write a book or paint a painting or make jewelry, whatever it is that makes them happy.
Okay,
so
start the process.
Yes, exactly.
That's something I'm going to get back to later and just put with you. For everyone listening. And two, for those who mentioned, who were listening when I mentioned, you mentioned Kim Meeks, your sister. She's a musician and singer. I believe right now she's either number one or in the top three of the R&B singers on Reverb Nation for
she is.
For Georgia. Right? Yeah, for the area. I was checking on her. But when we had the show back in, I believe it was September, with my friend Joey Stuckey, the musician who produced the Macon Music CD, she was one of the people chosen to be featured on that for music from Macon, Georgia. She's simply phenomenal. Then I meet you, her sister, and you guys are like the 1-2 punch, the the powerful Meek sisters from Macon. And I've also featured, I've played her songs so much, and anybody everybody should listen to her. She's great. But I tell you what,
I totally agree.
She's fantastic. Go back and listen to my old shows, or look up Kim Meeks, Sherry Meeks, and I'll tell you. I think that there's even going to be a few opportunities in the future where people can see you both together, if they're lucky.
Yeah.
Where she'll be playing and you'll be maybe reading from or signing your books. But right now, you got a few. And if you want to call in and talk to Kim Meeks, Sherry Meeks, if you have a question about Sherry's writing process, about the book Finding Tambry, about where she's going to be soon, because she's about to be really busy on the road, give us a call. The number here, and it's toll-free in the U.S., 646-716-9922. Right now, I've got a call from somebody I'm going to bring in the studio. Hi, this is Madam Perry. How are you doing? Hello?
I'm doing fabulous. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. We're doing fine. Come on in. Have a seat.
Thank you. This seat looks very, very comfy. Hope you don't mind me spinning around in there like a little kid.
Actually, we like that. We like that. Just, you know, just cover your beverages. I don't want anything flung out. Cleaning man to come in and find out that, you know. Mm-mm. So anyway.
These call the pretty penny, so you're fine.
Okay. Hey, is this my good friend, David?
Yeah, of course it is, young lady. It's me. How can you get me mistaken with anybody else?
Not at all. Well, actually, we were thinking we were going to have this gangster guy call in. But, you know, just wanted to make sure you both had the deep voices. And we figured if you said forget about it, we'd know it was him. Well, not like that. That has my southern accent thrown into it. But, so, David, Sherry, I'm delighted for you to meet my friend David Callahan here. And David, Sherry Meeks, the author.
Hey, hello,
David. How are you?
I'm peachy. Fantabulous. Yourself?
I am great. So nice
okay,
to
now,
meet you.
Okay, now that's strange. Because the gangster guy went to college with Sherry, and he calls her Peach. So just kind of.
Oh, great. Great. Well, the gangster is probably an alternate ego that I have that is probably sleeping right now. So we'll let that giant keep lying.
Yeah, we'll keep on. So listen, my friend David Callahan, a lot of people that are regular listeners are already aware, David is a fantastic guy. He has a business called Flash Wireless.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And tell us what Flash Wireless is, David. Tell us what you have that we need in the wireless world.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Flash Wireless. It's difference with Flash Wireless and most of the carriers that you currently have is how we give back to society. For example, we have a promotion going on that if you were to refer 5 people to Flash Wireless using your cell phone number as a reference number, your cell phone is free for life. That includes taxes, surcharges. Your bill is 0.00. Just refer 5 people to the website. That's one. Number two, which I think is kind of an even better incentive, is we partnered up with a charity called Project Feeding Kids. So there's about 17 million hungry children in the U.S. that do not know where they're going to get their next meal from. So the way Project Feeding Kids works, it would partner with us. Every time you pay your Flash Wireless bill, proceeds of that money goes to feeding a child. So just know whatever you pay your Flash Wireless bill, you're also feeding a child somewhere in the U.S. So I personally think that's a heaven sent, because I know before I had my wireless company, whenever I paid my bill, I got a receipt. That was it. Now it fed some salaries, of course, but it didn't feed any children in this country. So those are two things. And coincidentally, what actually launched today, I was waiting pretty much like the last couple of months for this, is we've now expanded our network. So anybody who happens to have, for example, like an AT&T phone or a T-Mobile phone, anything on a GSM network, you can now bring your phone over. So if you want to keep your same phone number, keep your exact same headset so you don't have to worry about bringing a brand new one and getting more familiar with that one, just go to flashwireless.com, put in my reference number, and everything is literally at your fingertips. Literally at your fingertips. And it's very simple.
Flashwireless.com.
Exactly.
And your reference number is?
916-284-7862. That's it.
Okay. Now, I will have this, of course, I will be putting this up on Facebook and Twitter. And
yes.
I will go add it in here, a link to that, on this page on Blog Talk Radio, flashwireless.com. And that's
yes.
if you write it down. Oh, go ahead, Sherry.
I was saying it's pretty amazing that you feed a child. How many wireless networks can say that? I mean, that's that's really amazing.
Flash wireless.
Exactly.
One can.
Exactly.
Flash wireless.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know how many people are in the military or who has relatives or friends overseas in different countries. But for me, I have a niece who's in the Navy. And so whenever I want to talk to her, there's a feature where you can get international calling as well. So calling South Korea, Philippines, Tokyo, Australia is the same thing as calling New York or California, landline or cell phone, or landline or mobile as well as text messaging. So I think it's really, really phenomenal in the fact that you're helping out the youth with every bill that gets paid. I mean, like you mentioned, what wireless provider can boast about being able to do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
None.
Very true. Very true.
So I think it's a very admirable thing that we got going on.
Okay, so with flashwireless.com and the number, get my friend David Callahan, and if you're listening to Madam Perry Salon, who's your friend too, 916-284-7862, which probably
exactly.
sounds like a cell phone number, and it is, but that is also the number to put in that as your special reference number for getting the deal. Now,
exactly.
David, I've got somebody else calling in, and I've got a few more things to promote, but I'm going to see who else this is at the door because I know David's spinning around in his chair. Sherry's got her special cushions over there. Let me see who else is in here. Hello, this is Madam Perry. Welcome to my salon.
Hello, it's Charlie Stella. I have
Charlie
a question.
Stella.
Yes. I want to know if we're going to see a follow-up to these stories because I think they were terrific. I'd love to see what happens even with Tambry's friend Vicky in that marriage because it looked like it was a little rocky that the guy was getting fed up.
It was getting a little bit of a tightrope there.
Definitely, it was. What Charlie is referring to is one of the short stories is about Vicky's husband and how this situation has affected him. And so, Charlie, you know, that is a really great idea, Charlie. I'm going to start thinking about that as soon as we hang up the phone, as soon as the podcast ends. I love that idea.
Well, I love open endings, and basically the story, you know, for everyone ends on an open ending, which I love. And you could always just keep going. I mean, that's what what I do with crime novels is link one to the other. But this is just, you know, it's just there. You got so many options. I hope you pursue them.
I'm going to. I'm definitely going to.
Cool.
Charlie, thank you. Thank you so much. Charlie was in the program with me, like you were saying, Jennifer. But thank you so much for asking that, Charlie. It's so funny how things work when somebody asks you something. You're like, oh, okay. That sounds perfect. So definitely, Charlie, I will. And
cool
how's Scrapper? How's Scrapper? Charlie has a new job.
Oh, he's giving us a handful. That's why I was so late getting here.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. That's all right.
All right. Well, listen, we're glad you're here.
I'll let you go.
Oh, well, you don't have to let us go. You can stay just a moment,
oh,
Charlie.
Okay.
Because just stay with me a minute. I've got to do a couple of things for some nice people that are keeping the show going. So if you guys stay right here, you can go ahead and spin around the chair too if you want while I'm doing this. And let me see. First of all, hey, folks, you know I like Yeah, I like sci-fi type stuff. And I found a great podcast called Switchboard Infinity. Switchboard Infinity is a sci-fi podcast. You can download it free on iTunes and Stitcher. I called it here on the site that it was by some way-out folks with further-out imaginations. Actually, Switchboard Infinity makes me think of a combination between Welcome to Night Vale and the guys who used to write Fire Sign Theater. If you don't know who that is, you ought to go look it up. But check it out. I've got the link to it here on the page. Another podcast is in London. It's called the Tino Orsini Show. Tino Orsini, that sounds like somebody you would know, Charlie. I know. If it ends in a vowel, we think that it's Italian. But
yeah, Tino Orsini.
Okay. Tino Orsini's podcast covers new cinema releases and theater productions in London. And some of the guests he's had on have been cabaret master Steve Ross, acting coach and director Kimberly Jensen, and recently he had as a guest an author and actress and musician that was on Madame Perry's Salon last week, Izzy Church, who's the author of a hilarious rom-com book, Angry Movie Guy. So definitely check it out. And one more thing, someone told me about, in fact, they wanted Madame Perry to tell you about the Android device called Andy. That's A-N-D-I. It's a multimedia device. It says it replaces Netflix. It delivers everything you want, movies, games, entertainment. And all you have to do, just click on the link I have here to Android device Andy. I've got links to all of my sponsors here, Flash Wireless, my friend David that's sitting here, Switchboard Infinity, Sci-Fi Podcast, Tino Orsini, and Android device Andy. And now we're going to ask a few more questions now that we finally have author Sherry Meeks in the hot seat here in Madame Perry Salon. We're going to ask her a bit more. If you want to call in and talk to her as well, the number is 646-716-9922. That's toll-free in the U.S. So, yeah, Charlie's talking about the other story with Tamri's best friend, Vicky, and her husband. And I got to say, there were times when I kept expecting the husband to be a little less understanding, a little less giving and forgiving about her having to go check on her friend. Come on, Sherry.
I do absolutely see what you mean, Jennifer, but I think his character is the kind of person that just kind of, you'll see through the stories that he loves Vicky, and he loves Tamri as a little sister. He loves her too. So he's very much stuck in the middle. He's very much stuck in the middle, and Vicky is so bent on, you know, helping Tamri that it kind of does affect their marriage. And I absolutely see what Charlie's talking about, that this can definitely go on and we can see further what happens with Vicky and her husband. And my mind is rolling around right now. Things are bouncing off the walls. So that sounds really good. So, and again, you don't know where the writing process is going to take you, but it is always interesting to see where it ends up.
Oh, and Vicky's a good character because she's a hairdresser. You know, she sees people good and bad, and like with the woman that's so mean to her that gives her a dollar tip, she goes, this is going to reflect in your tip if you're not, keep your dollar. Because, you know, anybody that's done knows these people. You got that character down.
Well, she's got great loyalty, yeah. She's got great loyalty, Sherry.
She does. She's the best friend who will do anything for her friend. Even though initially she was jealous of Tamri because Tamri was the popular girl and that kind of thing. But now she realizes in the story that none of that matters. And I think we all go through that when something tragic like that happens. You realize that these silly things don't matter. And Vicky's definitely that person that has realized.
Yet I could see where her husband would get fed up. And I thought that was really well done. I mean, not because he doesn't like Tamri or anything, but just because, you know, that alone time, you know, you get jealous. I get jealous of the new dog. Forget about it.
And here's another thing. Is too, you know, he is a good, what was the guy's name, Brian? Maybe her Bubba?
No, her.
Dude?
Nope, her husband's name? Is that what you're asking, Jennifer? His name
Vicky's
is...
Husband.
And now I can't even think of it, and I wrote his name. Charlie, help me out here.
You see, that's what happens once you start writing another novel. You forget everybody.
Oh, no.
Forget about it.
Forget about it. I'll think of it as soon as the podcast.
That means you're a writer.
Anyway, he's a good, you know, he's a faithful, you know, he's hanging on for his wife and her friend who he loves. But you got to think at some point this guy, even as good-hearted as he is, he's going to take out one of Tambry's husbands, you know, and take him out behind a woodshed. I'm just saying.
Well, you know what's interesting is that it is interesting that I can't remember the character's name, but at the same time, it kind of coincides with the fact that he is, you know, he's a quiet person. He puts up with a lot of stuff at work, and he's putting up with a lot of stuff at home. But if you saw him in a restaurant sitting with Tambry and Vicky, which is a scene in the book, you would just think he was, you might not even notice him because he's that kind of guy. But inside, you know, we all have these feelings, and absolutely he's jealous of this tragic event, which is weird in its own way, that he's jealous of that. But the fact is that his wife's time is being taken away from him. So it's
Let's
a very
break it
tough
down,
situation.
Sherry. He's going to whoop one of these guys behind the bar one time. That's all I'm saying. He's going to just, you can talk all about it. You can philosophize all you want about it.
Yeah.
But one day he's going to drag him out by, wait till he's good and drunk, and just drag him out behind the bar.
Or he might just leave Vicky without a word.
See, it doesn't make him a bad person if he beats somebody up. That's
not
true.
At all. Not at all. He just,
I think he might just leave Vicky without a word, and she would be devastated. That's what I think might be the next thing. Maybe. We'll see how the writing goes.
I don't think he'll leave her. I just think that, well, I just told you what I think.
You never know.
So what do you, I don't know. I think maybe Tambry should take off up north and, maybe somewhere around New Jersey, get a change of scenery, a new crowd. What do you think, Charlie?
Catch up with one of Charlie's characters. That would be
interesting. Why not? Hey, one of my guys ran to the south. He's on a limb. He ran south, so you never know.
That's funny. Oh,
well, that could happen, you know, and you know, just today, I was talking to Sherry earlier today about putting ads in different magazines, newspapers, and one was called J-Town. It's Jackson Township, New Jersey. I'm just saying, you may have a
there
connection
there,
Sherry.
The synchronicity is kicking in for sure.
She's using big words now, synchronicity.
Oh, Charlie. as great a writer as you are, you
yeah, you
know what they mean.
I keep Google on hand at all times.
One thing I did want to mention, Jennifer, with Charlie on the phone, is the fact that, and I know Charlie's going to attest to this too, going through the MFA program at Southern New Hampshire, and I think Charlie talked about this before on your show, the instructors that we work with there, the professors that we work with there, really helped to shape my story for sure, my book for sure. They helped to kind of guide me in a direction and show me things like I hopefully show my students. I'm hoping I've learned from them. But definitely the program helped me to finish the book, and also it helped me to definitely become a better writer. And Charlie was
100% agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100% agree. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, I just finished Charlie Opera, one of your books, Charlie. Love it. And also, I'm about to restart Johnny Bench Press.
Jimmy Bench Press. That was the title I remember.
Jimmy Bench Press. I'm
sorry. Well, I think
Charlie,
you definitely got some open endings that you could really just go wild with. And that's the beauty of the writing experience. You could just do whatever you want, and I think Sherry, really, you got so many great characters in there. You could just spin off in which direction.
Charlie, I'm gonna. I thank you so much for saying that. I'd never really even thought about it, but definitely it's something that I'm gonna pursue. So I really appreciate that.
Cool. Good. I got a crowd in here with the dog. I've got to get going. So,
okay.
Listen, it's great talking to you guys again.
You too. Thank you so
and
much,
I did
Charlie.
Love the book very much, very much. So,
thank you so much.
Best of luck with everything, okay?
Thank you. All right, pet
speak to you guys again.
All right, thanks. Bye, Charlie.
Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Jennifer, you still there? Jennifer?
Did you step off the room without letting us know?
Jennifer, are you there?
people.